Good morning. We'll call this meeting of the Job Growth and Energy Affordability Policy and Finance Committee to order. Today is Monday, February 9th. The first order of business will be approval of the minutes. Representative Smith moves approval of the minutes dated February 4th. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All say nay. I guess we'll take that as a no. The minutes are approved. First of all, I believe we have the mayor of Willmar here today, who's got a couple of opening comments. Welcome to the committee, sir, and please have a seat and tell us about your wonderful city.
Yes, that's right. My name is Marv Calvin. I'm mayor for the city of Willmar. Thank you for coming to our beautiful city. We have a lot of wonderful, great things happening here in Willmar. And as people have said in the past, if you take a look at what Willmar looks like today, you'll see what the state of Minnesota will look like in another 10 to 15, 20 years. We have tremendous diversity within our community. We have a growing, vibrant downtown that we're still continuing to work on expanding. And of course, we have an industrial park ready for expansion as well. So we're glad you're here. Welcome to Willmar. If there's anything we can do for you while you're here, make sure and let us know. We certainly want to be hospitable to you. One of the big things we have here, of course, is the MinWest Technology Campus, and you'll be hearing more about that in a little bit. But I'm very pleased to see that you guys made the trip here. It would have been nice if you had a little more sun so you could have seen all the wonderful things. But if you take a look out to the west as you get ready to leave town here, you'll see one of our beautiful lakes. And in this area is where the lakes begin. And so we're very pleased to have you here. Thank you very much for being here, and I won't take any more of your time. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. We appreciate you speaking to us today. We look forward to hanging out in Willmar a little bit today. Next, we have some honorary pages who are going to be assisting in our committee today. If the two gentlemen want to introduce themselves.
All right.
This is the part where you guys say your name. Introduce yourselves.
We were a little confused because our teacher had us make a list, but I guess we will be introducing ourselves. I'm Preston DiCatholino. I'm a junior at Willmar Senior High School. I'm in National Honor Society. I'm in Cardinal Band and Cardinal Choir, the top choir and band at our high school. And I'm on the baseball team, and I'm looking forward to being here today.
And do you have any varsity letters that we should know about?
I have an academic letter and one for baseball as well.
All right.
So, and how are your grades? Are you an honor student? Are you perhaps maybe an honor student?
I am in National Honor Society, so my grade point average is 3.83 right now, I think.
Oh, just a little bit above mine when I was in high school.
Chair, what was yours?
A lot less than that, Mr. Representative Mahoney, a lot less. Please.
And I'm Nick Revere. I'm a junior in Willmar High School as well. I have, I'm an honor student and varsity letters in hockey and tennis, and
do you have a varsity letter for academics as well?
Yep, I do as well.
Yeah, so, well, good. Well, thank you to both our pages for volunteering today and assisting the committee. You'll quickly find out that without a support staff, the legislators here are completely lost. So thank you very much for stepping up and helping us out. Next, I have for the overview of the MinWest Technology Campus briefly, we have Joanna Schrump. Representative Mahoney. Oh, yeah, there's an announcement we wanted to share with the committee before we...
Committee members, let's see, this is on. Representative Isaacson had planned on being here today, but, you know, his wife detained him last night by the birth of his second child.
Good.
And late last night. And I'm just shocked that at 7 o'clock when I texted him, he was actually coherent enough to respond that, no, I'm not coming. So anyhow, we will see him sometime in the near future, I'm sure, and we'll be able to give him our congratulations.
Knowing Representative Mahoney, knowing Representative Isaacson, I'm sure it was Mrs. Isaacson who was responding to the text message after the kid, right? So please state your name for the record.
Joanna Schrupp with the MinWest Technology Campus. Thank you,
Thank
Mr.
you.
Chair. Welcome to the MinWest Technology Campus. Hopefully, if you drove in, you admired some of the beautiful buildings we have out here on campus. The MinWest Technology Campus is a privately owned technology campus purchased in 2006. Just to back up 100 years ago, let me give you a little history about the campus. So in 1912, the Willmar, it was a different name other than the Willmar State Hospital, but it opened up to treat those who were suffering from alcoholism. So in 1912, the first building opened up. Through the years, it had many different name changes from the Willmar State Hospital and ending up with the Willmar Regional Treatment Center. As healthcare was changing and the patient census was lowering, at the same time, there was a company on the west side of Willmar that is a technology manufacturing robotics type company working in the poultry industry. They were looking for people to move out and work as engineers in their company, and they were having a hard time attracting engineers. So just think of it, if you're a new grad and you're an engineer, would you want to come and work in a pole barn with shag carpet on the walls in Willmar, Minnesota, if you were attracted to all the nightlife in Minneapolis, St. Paul? So they were having a hard time attracting engineers. And so, at the same time that the facility out here was decreasing in patient census and healthcare was changing, Novatech Engineering was thinking, are we going to move? So local officials got involved, company executives got involved, and a year and a half, 2 years later, the MinWest Technology Campus was purchased by Life Science Innovations and Novatech Engineering. So the company that could have moved actually landed out here on campus, and they are half owners of the campus. So moving out here with 43 employees, they now have 150, and they are a leading company on campus. So where are we at today? We have 30 companies out here. We have 475 people who work in those 30 companies. 425 are full-time, 50 are part-time, and we monitor that on a monthly basis. We are approximately 60% full, so we do have some cottages that we are ready to renovate as soon as we get companies who are ready to move out here or expand. So, as we expand and companies move out here, we are building to suit their needs. And so that is my job as a business development person, to look for those companies who want to move out here or companies who want to expand, open a department, open a division. Some of the companies that we focus on are in agribusiness, bioscience, technology, and a lot in the agriculture segment or area. To date, we have invested over $15 million, and that's private dollars. That's all the information that I have for you today. I won't take up any more of your time, and if you have questions, I can try and answer those.
Well, thank you very much. Again, we appreciate the presentation, and will you be available for questions at the completion of our hearing today?
Certainly.
Super. That's great. Well, thanks again. We appreciate
it. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Annie Levinson-Falk. Annie Levinson-Falk is the Executive Director for the Legislative Energy Commission, and Ms. Levinson-Falk is going to do a brief presentation on the propane conversion strategies that she recently performed. Welcome to the committee, and even though I said your name, please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Annie Levinson-Falk. I am the Executive Director of the Legislative Energy Commission. As the Chair said, in 2014, the legislature requested a study from the LEC on the feasibility of converting propane users to natural gas or other alternative sources of heat. So I'll be presenting from that report, focusing more on a summary of propane use in Minnesota and a little bit on the various alternatives that were covered in the study. So a little bit about propane to start. Minnesota uses an average of 400 million gallons of propane every year. This varies dramatically depending on the weather. You can see just over the past 5 years or so how much this varies from year to year. This represents more than $600 million of spending each year. Actually, in 2012, which was the low point on this graph, Minnesotans spent $612 million on propane. And all of that propane is imported into Minnesota. We have no propane or other fossil fuel sources here in Minnesota. I apologize for the graphic here, but if you have a copy of the printed handout, these charts will show you better the way that the propane is used in Minnesota. The largest use goes to residential, so that's mainly for space heating, water heating, cooking, and related uses. The second largest is for agricultural purposes, and among agricultural uses, corn drying is the largest use of propane. Of course, that varies tremendously year to year. The second largest agricultural use is barn heating, primarily poultry barns, especially turkey. you look at the way that propane use is spread out across the state, this is just for residential usage. So this, what this map shows is a concentration of propane usage as a primary heating fuel in Minnesota residences. It's approximately 10% on average across the state. And what you can see is the denser areas, especially the metropolitan, Twin Cities metro area, there's a much larger chance that the residences in those areas will have natural gas service and won't be dependent on propane. But when you get out into the outlying areas, propane usage is much higher. It's hard to make out on this map, but the Willmar area is above the state average. Propane use in residential is much more an issue of geography than it is of income. If you break it down by income, it's a pretty consistent 8 to 12% of all income levels that do use propane. So last year, as you know, Minnesota and the Midwest in general experienced a propane shortage and price spikes associated with that. This was kind of a perfect storm of issues that happened last year. Very high demand due to a large, late and damp corn harvest that used a lot of propane for grain drying. And late in the year where it was difficult to replenish those supplies before the winter heating season. Very cold weather, as everybody remembers. Interruptible natural gas customers use a lot of propane, so natural gas utilities have certain large users that volunteer to basically interrupt their natural gas usage at very high points of load on their natural gas systems. So there was an explosion on a natural gas pipeline in Canada that shut down part of the supply to Minnesota last year. And also because of the cold weather, natural gas utilities had to call on those interruptible customers much more than was normal. And often those customers, if they're not using natural gas, switch to propane. They can use multiple semi-truckloads full of propane each day. And just for comparison, a semi-truckload is enough to heat 20 homes for 1 month. So they can really use a lot very quickly. And finally, the Cochin pipeline was closed for maintenance partway through the heating season last year and shut down completely in the early spring. So the Cochin pipeline had previously brought about 40% of Minnesota's propane supply into the state. For business reasons, the company decided to no longer ship propane on that pipeline. It's been reversed and is shipping distillates to Canada now. Again, that happened in March, but in November to December, there was a three-week shutdown for modifications. The company did delay that shutdown to accommodate the corn drying season, but it did have to happen during the heating season. Since the Cochin pipeline is no longer delivering propane, the propane industry in Minnesota is now more dependent on rail shipments, and I believe Mr. Leiter from the Propane Association will probably speak more to this. The industry has done a lot to increase rail capacity, storage capacity here in Minnesota. And overall, it's less reliance on the just-in-time kind of business model that was allowed with the more of a pipeline distribution system. So this graph shows the effect of the propane shortage on prices in Minnesota. This is a residential weekly residential prices between October and March. You can see that it's a fairly consistent about $1.50 to $2.25. It fluctuates year to year and over the course of each season. But there is an enormous spike about January of 2014. Average Minnesota prices that at the top of that spike went up to $4.61 and were probably higher in some local markets. It went up very quickly, it came down very quickly, and it has been pretty steadily declining since then. So legislative avenues, options available to legislators to help alleviate some of these pressures in the future. There are a number of storage, propane market, and propane supply strategies. These were outside of the scope of the legislative request to the Legislative Energy Commission, so they're not part of the research that we performed. But you will be hearing more about these later in this meeting. Another option is to more efficiently use the public money that is spent on propane through the low-income heating assistance program, LIHEAP money. If you can use public money to pre-buy some of that propane during the summer, as is recommended for all customers, You can usually get propane at a lower price than if it's bought after October when the federal money comes from the U.S. government. I believe that will be addressed more as well. And finally, there are a number of alternatives for users of propane that can sometimes provide cost-effective supplements or a replacement to propane heating fuel. Just briefly to go over some of those alternatives. First, conservation, no matter what energy source you're talking about, should be the first consideration. You can often save money by making an upfront investment to conserve or use energy more efficiently. In this case, often weatherization improvements are a good investment. Natural gas, where pipelines can be cost-effectively extended, is generally a much lower cost fuel than propane because it can be transmitted through those pipelines. Some natural gas utilities did some expansions into a handful of towns last year, and we'll be finishing those up this coming spring and summer. However, because of the low population and low fuel usage density in much of rural areas of the state, it's going to be very difficult to make that cost effective. There are some things that the legislature can do to help those costs be shared a little bit more and help the economics work out in a few situations. But largely, much of the rural areas of the state will still be dependent on delivered and distributed heating resources. So where natural gas is not cost effective, there can be alternatives to propane that can be cost effective in certain situations. That includes things like wood or other types of woody biomass, solar thermal, off-peak electric heat, waste heat recovery through a system like a district energy system or a combined heat and power. So I didn't go into very much detail on those. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Any questions for members of the committee? Fully informed, as always. Thank you very much, Ms. Levinson-Falk. And you'll be around if we have questions during the presentation.
Yes.
Thank you very much. All right, so Representative Baker, if you want to go up to the table. And Representative Baker, I think what we'll do is we'll have you move the bill. We'll adopt the amendments that you wish to adopt, and then we'll have House Research go through and do an overview of the bill as you as the author intends. Is that correct?
That's correct.
All right. Representative Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And again, before I move the bill, I'd like to just again thank you all for coming out here to our beautiful community. I'm very proud to have my very first bill recognized here in my hometown and of Candiota County, and it's just a pleasure to get so many legislators up so early on a Monday morning. So thank you again for doing this for us here. Mr. Chair, I'd like to formally move House File 550 to pass today, and this will also go on to the Tax Committee next, would be the next journey of this bill. As far as the amendments that are attached, most of these amendments, I think, are good amendments. Some are more definition changes, and we can talk about this later with our experts, I think, that could help us with that, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Well, Representative Baker, we'll move the author's amendment. First of all, we'll start with the A5 amendment. And again, members, this is just to put the bill in the form the author would like. Any discussion? All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. Motion prevails. Also, Representative Baker, my understanding is the A2 amendment is also an author's amendment. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Representative Baker moves the A2 amendment. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. Motion prevails. And finally, the A6 amendment is that's your amendment as well, Representative Baker?
That is correct.
Representative Baker moves the A6 amendment. Seeing no discussion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. The motion prevails. Representative Baker, are either the A3 or A4 amendments yours?
A4 is not mine, Mr. Chair, and A3 is not mine. I may want to look for some clarification from Commerce.
So the A4 amendment, Representative Portman, that's your amendment, is that correct? Okay. And is there any member who wants to take ownership of the A3 amendment?
Mr. Ila.
Mr. Chair, actually, I drafted the A3 amendment.
Oh, Representative Eloff moves the A3 amendment. No, go ahead, Representative
Baker. On behalf of Representative Baker,
yes.
And let me explain why I did. The bill is currently drafted, and we'll get to this a little bit more when I do a summary of the bill, but it's currently drafted. The funds in Section 8 are transferred from one account to an account in the Energy and Conservation account under the SIP program. And when I looked at that again, that account requires it consists largely of monies that are contributed by utilities, which are required to contribute a certain proportion of their gross revenues to low-income programs. But that provision also states that those funds must be used in the areas of that those utilities serve. And my understanding is that Representative Baker's point in making this transfer is to allow these funds to be used for low-income propane customers who, as we know, are largely living outside areas that are served by natural gas. So what the A3 amendment does is declare that the funds that are transferred from that other program be used by the Department of Commerce for conservation, energy conservation and weatherization programs to low-income persons who use propane, and that the funds shall be dispersed in the same manner as the federal low-income home energy assistance program, LIHEAP funds, which does go to people outside of where utilities service them.
Very good, Representative Eloff.
Thank you.
The chair will move the A3 amendment then. Any discussion? Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Eloff, could you explain a little bit more for me just to make sure? So what we're doing is we're opening up the ability for monies generated in XL Energy, which serves the Twin Cities and the surrounding counties, to be used anywhere in the state? Is that what we're doing here?
Mr. Eloff.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mahoney. Not exactly, Representative Mahoney. There is an account that's currently called the Energy Conservation Account that is under the Conservation Improvement Program. And that is the account where utilities are required to spend, as I said, a certain proportion of their gross operating revenues on low-income programs. They can do those low-income programs on their own, or they may, as an alternative, contribute those amounts to this account. And the Department of Commerce disperses those funds largely through contract with the CAP agencies. But that account specifies that the money in it must be used in the service areas of the utilities that contribute to it. That would make it unlikely for a lot of that money to go to propane users who live outside of utility service areas. And what the amendment does is allow those monies to be dispersed essentially through the CAP agencies as the LIHEAP funds are now done, because those funds go to people who live outside utility service areas, as well as inside, but also outside. If we didn't do this, the funds couldn't be spent anywhere besides in the utility area, in the service areas of the utilities that contribute to that account.
Representative Mahoney.
So, Mr. Chair and Representative Baker, what you're doing here is you're taking money from the urban areas and redistributing it to greater Minnesota. Is that correct?
Actually,
hold on. Mr. Eloff, can you?
Mr. Chair and Representative Mahoney, we are adding a new source. We are adding a new source of funds to this account from the solar thermal rebate account. That's where the money is being taken from. The provision I just mentioned, which is that monies contributed by utilities have to be spent in those utility service areas, still applies to the money in that account that utilities contribute, but it wouldn't apply to these new monies that have been transferred from the solar thermal rebate program.
Representative Mahoney.
So, Mr. Chair and Representative Baker, now the solar PV account, I think, has $15 million a year. Solar thermal has $300,000 a year.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mahoney, $250,000 a year.
$250,000 a year. Can you explain to me why you decided to go with the solar thermal rather than the PV?
one correction, Representative Mahoney. I think it's $20 million a year that comes out of the, isn't it $15 million from Made in Minnesota and $5 million for the solar incentive programs? It's $20 million here. Representative Hartman, you were the author of the bill. You can correct us.
Mr. Chair, it's $15 million from the RDF for the PV program. It's $250,000 a year. The Excel program that they run is a separate.
That's outside of the RDF?
That's my understanding.
Mr. Eloff, do you concur with that?
Mr. Chair, about $4 to $5 million a year in the PV program comes from 5% of utilities SIP spending.
Right.
The rest of it comes from the RDF.
Okay. So, Representative Baker, the solar thermal program, it's not being used. Why are you using it?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Mahoney. I think that when we looked for some good conservative measures to use funds that are already allocated and already in a fund, currently wasn't getting a lot of activity. Now, as far as I know, there was about $50,000-$60,000 in that account prior to this year's appropriation of $250,000. So we felt that moving that $300,000 would allow for that rebate program to happen, again, in light of the severe winter last year. It was a good source of monies already appropriated that wasn't heavily being demanded upon, so I thought that was a good fund to work with.
Representative Mahoney?
Mr. Chair, Representative Baker, you, being a freshman, probably don't know the history of 8 or 10 years of trying to get the legislature to address solar thermal, because solar thermal is an actual heating source versus just an energy source. And there's a particular legislator that's been at the Capitol since 1998 that's worked really hard. So I don't quite understand why something that, and I'll just, it's me that has been fighting for solar thermal because it's cheaper, more energy efficient, it's used more direct, it actually creates heat, you can add humidity to it, which in the state of Minnesota during the winter you have to. And I believe the solar thermal is taking up upwards of 100 to 125,000 in its first year or two, and it's growing. So now all of a sudden you want to just shut it down.
Representative Mahoney, the amendment we have before us is changing the language of the provisions of the bill. Would it be okay if we kind of debated the substance of the bill when it's actually in the form that it's supposed to be? Because your questions are legitimate. It's just that what we're doing right here, this amendment, the A3 amendment, is just making the language of the bill workable. Does that be okay if we can certainly debate the amendment now if you wish, but it does, whether the amendment is adopted or not, it doesn't change the substance of the bill in terms of whether solar thermal is used or not. Representative Mahoney?
Well, Mr. Chair, this is like the nose of a camel under the tent. I mean, once you get this in, then all of a sudden it's a whole other argument about what you can do or not do, or where you take the money from. If this amendment goes in, it's already in there. It's in, and that money can, it's just a matter of getting the money from one particular place, this solar thermal, and putting it into here. So I have a real difficulty with the amendment.
Understood. And Representative Mahoney, the House File 550 has amended whether the A3 amendment is adopted or not would take the money from solar thermal was my point. So we can discuss the merits of that idea now, or we can just get the bill amended. It's up to you. What's your preference?
No, go right ahead, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Representative Hartman?
Mr. Chair, I'll wait until we get to the substance of the bill.
Seeing no further discussion, all those in favor of the A3 amendment, please signify by saying aye. Aye. Opposed, say nay.
No.
The motion prevails. All right. Representative Baker, the bill is now in the form that you wish. We have one more amendment that we'll work on after the presentation of your bill, but do you have testifiers lined up that you wish to speak to the bill?
I do, Mr. Chairman. Again, thank you very much. Before I call up my testifiers, again, I just wanted to point out to the committee that hearing so much of from our folks out here in rural Minnesota last year on all the doors that I knocked on, propane was a very big issue, as you know. And I think the perfect storm, as we heard earlier in the earlier presentation, put me to, I think, using a lot of the work that has been done in the past of legislative efforts to find better ways of moving natural gas and propane in rural Minnesota. So again, as even as Representative Mahoney has mentioned, using some of those other funds is important. We don't want to shut down the important work that solar thermal is as well, but it's a good use of those funds right away. And I think we wanted to just make sure that, in my opinion, using funds that really will benefit houses and homes and folks with low income is a priority for us right now. I think we need to keep that in mind. So everything in this bill is really focused on helping families. There is no subsidies, there's no low interest loans, there's no grants for businesses or to help bottom lines for businesses. I want to make sure that's clear as we kind of talk about this bill today. So with that, I just want to go over some very high level stuff and say that we've got some components, and I'll turn it over to our expert, Mr. Eloff, if we could. Again, just locking into lower prices for families is important. To be able to do that with some summer buys will be a very important part of this. When historically propane has been at its lowest in the summertime, we'll be able to show how to use, how to allocate some state funding and actually utilize the federal spending coming in shortly after that. And I think it's a good use of Minnesota funds for a short time. And again, we'll explain that in a few minutes. House File 5550 also includes financing options for businesses and families that want to actually increase their equipment in businesses, but allowing them to actually use a financing option on their local sales tax, or I'm sorry, their local property tax form, so they can actually take out large investments and they can use that kind of an effort to finance equipment purchases. If homes want to buy new appliances, they can actually do those kind of financing mechanisms as well. A number of other provisions that we'll work on, again, will be explained in a few minutes. This is just the very first step, I think, in some good propane policy changes that I think are needed. And again, we're here today largely because of last winter's super high rates and the threat that a lot of barns in our area, a lot of homes in our area had to borrow money to pay for their bills. It was a devastating winter for some that had to deal with this, and I think we're dealing with a lot of those issues now. I also wanted to make a point that I've discussed this bill with Representative Paul Marquardt, who has written kind of different aspects of this bill in years prior. He's very supportive of this bill, and I think has also co-signed this with me. So again, with that, Mr. Chair, I will call ahead our first testifier, unless that's something that you would do, or is that something I bring forward?
Well, we're going to have Mr. Eloff to do an overview of the bill, and then if you, your first testifier, if you want us to have them come to the table and get
that'd
ready so we're ready to go.
Thank you.
Mr. Eloff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll just summarize the 10 sections of the bill quickly. The first three sections of the bill add new definitions to the statutes, a definition of propane, a definition of propane storage facility, and Section 3, a definition of synthetic gas. And let me focus a little bit on that one. In a way, the most important words in that definition are the last five, but does not include propane. So this is a definition of synthetic gas that specifically excludes propane from that definition. Currently, there is no definition of synthetic gas in the Minnesota statutes, but there is such a definition in the rules of the Public Utilities Commission, and that definition does include propane. And the commission uses that definition to require that a propane storage facility undergo what's called a certificate of need process in Minnesota, which I think most members are familiar with. It's a hearing that's run very much like a trial with testimony by both sides before an administrative law judge. And that process is to determine whether or not the facility needs to be built. By excluding propane from this definition, a propane storage facility would no longer be required to undergo a certificate of need process. The definition also would exclude a propane storage facility from the requirement, which it's subject to now under the statutes, of having an environmental assessment worksheet prepared for such a project. And under this new definition, that a mandatory environmental assessment worksheet will not be needed for a propane storage facility. Section 4 is a statute that allows a public utility that is serving 600 or and 50 or fewer customers in any municipality or a total of 2,000 customers from it exempts them from being price regulated by the Public Utilities Commission. And this bill changes that. It would increase the number of customers from 2,000 to 5,000 under which a public utility would not be price regulated by the commission. Section 5 is a statutory definition of large energy facility, and it's a large energy facility that requires a certificate of need. So as you can see on page 3, line 9, propane storage facilities are excluded from that definition. So again, they would not require a certificate of need. Section 6 in the bill refers to the PACE program, Property Assessed Clean Energy, which currently gives municipalities in Minnesota the authority to issue revenue bonds and to use the proceeds of those bonds to make energy loans to businesses and residents. Currently, the energy loans that are made can be repaid over time by an additional assessment on the property taxes of the individual or business. Currently, that program can be used for energy conservation and the installation of renewable energy systems. This bill, lines 324 to 326, would also allow the installation of infrastructure or machinery or equipment when natural gas is, when there's a conversion from propane to natural gas or a conversion to propane to be included as projects which can repay those loans on a assessment on property taxes. Section 7 of the bill exempts the purchase of propane tanks that are 100 gallons or more from the sales tax, and that provision expires at the end of 2017. Section 8 is the section that Representative Mahoney referred to earlier. It transfers 300,000 funds from the solar thermal system rebate account to another account which can be used for low-income propane users. Section 9 references a current program of the state that allows the Commissioner of Commerce to pre-purchase propane in the summer months when prices are usually cheaper, and then distribute that in the fall. And this section requires a report on the activities that occur over the next 2 years. And the reason for that is contained in Section 10. It's an appropriation of $5 million in each year, fiscal year 2015 and 2016. To the Commissioner of Commerce for the purpose of pre-purchasing propane. And Clause B of that section on page 5 specifies that each of those years, when the federal funds for the LIHEAP program come to the state, the Commissioner shall reserve $5 million and essentially transfer those amounts to the general fund to reimburse the general fund for the earlier amount. And that concludes the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Rilo. Welcome to the committee, sir. Please state your name for the record.
Drew Combs. Good morning, Chairman Garoppolo and committee members. I'm Drew Combs, Vice President of Propane for CHS. CHS is the nation's leading cooperative delivering propane and energy and agriculture and foods items headquartered in Invergrove Heights, Minnesota. We're owned by over 600,000 farmers nationwide through member cooperatives and CHS retail locations. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, propane is an integral component of the CHS energy portfolio. We've delivered propane for over 40 years to our constituents, mainly here predominantly in Minnesota as well as in the rest of the United States, also delivering related equipment to farmer owners and customers throughout rural America. As Ms. Levinson Falk stated earlier, the winter of 2013 and 14 was a perfect storm of such. We've seen it in previous years, but last year was very intense. We had unexpected weather in the fall that created a crop drying event that strained our propane needs early on in the wintertime. With the advent of Cochin Pipeline, as well having struggles in that fall during the wintertime as well, it did supplant much propane. Typically, Cochin supplies 40% of the propane in this marketplace during a typical year. What we saw is a very cold winter as well that allowed for consumers to be able to utilize more propane than they typically would in the wintertime. And as you heard as well, a tremendous amount of curtailment in the natural gas environment that allowed the commercial users to drop over to propane and impact the market as well. As we know, Cochin Pipeline has reversed and is now transporting products to Canada, no longer delivering propane to the United States, lower 48. As a result of that, CHS committed up to $24 million to install new facilities within the states of North Dakota, Minnesota, and Wisconsin to service those marketplaces, one of which is about 40 miles north of here in Glenwood, Minnesota. Despite the importance of increasing storage capacity and increasing supply, the Glenwood terminal expansion would have been significantly delayed if it wasn't the responsiveness of the commissioners of the Agriculture, the Commerce, and the Pollution Control Agency, as well as the decision by the Public Utilities Commission to grant a waiver of Certificate of Need, called the CON process, last year. The one-year waiver was granted, recognizing that a permanent legislative fix needed to be made this year. What we would like to say is that CHS does support the definitions that Representative Baker's bill has in HF 550. The Rural Relief Act is targeted statute classification for future siting of propane storage in Minnesota. Existing statute is ill-suited for propane storage facilities because propane is neither a synthetic gas nor a liquefied natural gas. Chairman Garofalo, members of the committee, thank you for your leadership on this important issue and for the opportunity to testify on this legislation. I would be open for questions at this time.
Any questions for members of the committee? Representative Sosinski.
I can just wait till all the testifiers are through. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Same thing with you. Any other questions for members of the committee? Thank you for your testimony, sir.
Thank you.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Chairman Garofalo, members of the committee. My name is Patrick Murray. I'm the Director of Government and Member Relations for Cooperative Network. Thank you for allowing me to testify today on behalf of House File 550, also known as the Rural Propane Relief Act. For background, Cooperative Network is a two-state trade association, Minnesota and Wisconsin cooperatives. Minnesota is the largest cooperative state in the country, meaning members per capita. Minnesota is the leader. We would like to thank Representative Baker for having us here in Wilmer today and for introducing House File 550. We have been and intend to continue working with Representative Baker on this legislation in an effort to encourage and incentivize the increase in propane infrastructure and to assist meeting the propane demand. House File 550 includes three key provisions supported by Cooperative Network. The first is a change to the statutory definitions laid out in sections 1, 2, 3, and 5. The second piece is the propane infrastructure incentives in section 7. And the third is the pre-purchasing of propane, which is laid out in section 10. Getting into the first bullet point, we do support the technical fix to the definitions of propane because we also, as Mr. Combs had also mentioned, propane is neither a liquefied natural gas nor a synthetic gas. We believe the statute should be amended to clearly define propane so that the certificate of need requirement is no longer inadvertently applied to propane storage facilities. It should be noted that Cooperative Network last June submitted a letter of comment to the Public Utilities Commission asking that they provide the relief that could assist in meeting the increased propane demand. We also testified in support of the variance request, which was unanimously approved by the Public Utility Commissioners. And among the findings that the PUC mentioned during that day was that they agreed urgent action was appropriate and that additional propane storage was needed. However, the variance was for only 1 year, hence this is why we have this language in the bill. Once the variance expires this coming summer, any new propane projects over 100,000 gallons will again require a certificate of need. The intent of the language included in sections 1, 2, 3, and 5 of House File 550 are to make the required changes in that definition. Regarding Section 7, which provides for the sales tax exemptions for the propane tanks over 100 gallons or more to include valves, regulators necessary for the use of the propane tank, we also support that provision for the sales tax exemption. This bill actually is currently included in two bills that have been introduced as standalones. House File 254, which is introduced by Paul Anderson from nearby Starbuck, as well as Senator Lyle Coonan on the Senate side, which is Senate File 289. We supported similar bills last year, and unfortunately they did not advance, so we're happy to see that Representative Baker has those two provisions included, that provision included in this bill. Lastly, Section 10, we support that one as well, which would involve using state dollars to front-load the LIHEAP program. The intent in this section would be for the low-income home energy assistance program to have the dollars up front from the state and then pay that back to the federal government. Due to the timing of the federal funding that is allocated by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, we believe these dollars could be used more wisely if they were available up front. When propane prices are higher in the winter, funds are received. Again, the idea behind it is to front load the funds so that we can purchase propane through that program at lower prices versus the higher rates, which folks saw and experienced last winter when they were much higher. As I wrap up here, apologize if this is long-winded. Crop drying demand and extreme cold weather contributed to the propane shortage in the fall of 2013 and the winter of 2013-14. We've mentioned the Cochin pipeline, the reversal, the shutdown that happened for 3 weeks in preparation for the reversal exacerbated the problem, and I think you've heard perfect storm many times, but we also want to assure ourselves that there's not another perfect storm that harms us here as it relates to propane availability. So once that the pipeline shut down in April of 2014, again, 40% of the propane that's available here in Minnesota no longer was, hence the need for additional capacity and storage for propane. Much has been done to address the situation, especially in the short term, including providing hours of service, which was done to the Dayton administration as well as the Department of Transportation Commissioners, so that our drivers could go to parts further out to pick up their propane, including Kansas and Texas. So clearly there were some cost provisions that were increased in the cost of propane for drivers to have to go to these states that were much further away. So we're grateful to the folks in the administration as well as the legislators that we work with for that to happen. And lastly, I'll close out. It's a long-term situation, as we were all talking about today. Working cooperatives are working to assure their customers we have a reliable source of propane into the future. Increasing propane storage for propane is necessary. The provisions outlined in House File 550 are a step in the right direction. We will continue to work with Representative Bakeman, Chairman Garofalo, and the members of the committee and others on this legislation moving forward. Mr. Chair, members, and Representative Baker, thanks for the opportunity. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Murray. Any questions for the testifier? Thank you very much. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Patricia Elizondo, Chair Garofalo and members of the committee, good morning. As I said, my name is Patricia Elizondo, and I am the Energy Assistance Manager for Heartland Community Action Agency. Our office, main office, is here in Wilmer, so thank you for coming to Wilmer today. I have been with Heartland and the Energy Assistance Program for the past 21 years. And I have some past experience working with the pre-purchase program bill, program similar to Mr. Baker's bill. What I saw in the past when we did this program back in 2006, it was a benefit to our families that we served. Families were able to get more propane for their energy assistance grant because they was locked in at a lower rate. Currently, what we are seeing now, some families that want to get enough propane for their tanks to cover their winter months are usually applying in the spring for energy assistance to be able to have that grant available to lock in for the summer fuel programs that some vendors provide. So they are able to get their fuel for the upcoming winter at a lower rate, not knowing, you know, what the price will be in the future. So they don't apply early because they want to be able to have this money available for summer to make a pre-purchase. And this is part of like the LIHEAP dollars from the federal government. This is what I have, so thank you for the opportunity to come here.
Thank you very much. Representative Hortman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I didn't catch your last name.
Elizondo.
Last winter, on the first day of the legislative session, we passed an additional $20 million in relief for families who use propane. I wondered if you noticed an impact on the families in this area from that legislation.
Yes, we did. A lot of our families, prices in our rural area here, generally our minimum would be like about $1.89. Last year, we were seeing as far as $8 a gallon, which, you know, for our families, even two parents working in a family weren't able to afford energy, their propane. I know that the income guidelines were also raised. We are currently at 50% of state medium income guidelines on a normal year. Last year, the state actually rose it to 60% to be able to serve those peoples, those families that were still struggling, that in the past have managed, and now with the high price, we're not able to.
Representative Hartman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Elizondo, do you think in the future the legislature should consider making permanent the increase in eligibility that we passed last year?
Yes, I do think so. 50%, you know, a lot of our families are, like I said, two families, two members working, but most of them are minimum wage. And with our gross wages for energy assistance, we look at gross wages for the past 3 months, and a lot of our families are falling behind the cracks.
Representative Hartman.
And do you think that it would be more advantageous to families if we were to look at net income rather than gross income, and does that have an impact in your program?
I think it does. A lot of our families have, especially families that are paying child support, they don't get to take that gross wage home, and we do look at that. And a lot of them, when they are applying for energy assistance, and they get, if they are over income and they get that letter saying they're over income for our program year, they call back wondering, well, you know, why are you looking at gross? I don't live off the gross. I live off the net. And like we always say, well, this is a time to call your legislators, let them know your concerns, because we have to follow the state guidelines.
Mr. Hartman, good questions. Any other questions from members of the committee? Thank you very much for your testimony. Welcome to the committee, sir. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Chairman Garofalo. I'm Roger Leiter, the Executive Director for the Minnesota Propane Association, and happy to have the opportunity to be out here today. Last year has been pretty well stated what happened and went throughout the year. I won't just really need to emphasize that what happened in Minnesota last year was an all energies issue. Propane, of course, took kind of a front burner when the news media was the price spiked and things happened with that. But as we looked around, we saw that there was price increases in natural gas and also the shortages that we had in the distribution of natural gas and electricity also caused a lot of people to have to move to the alternative fuel, which is propane, which helped exacerbate the problem that we have. Really want us to make sure that as we look forward, that we look at the, it's a whole energy issue and not particularly one. Of course, as I see propane conversion strategies, that's really not in my best interest to see those happening. But I realize, again, that it is an all-energies issue that we have here. I'd like to kind of outline what the Minnesota Propane Association and the industry did in this last year. Recognizing early on that we had to change our strategy with the loss of the Cochin Pipeline, such people as CHS, Dooley Petroleum, Alliance Energy, and others, I'd add in Winter Propane out of Cold Spring, Minnesota, along with many, many, many marketers, put in extra storage. They began this process way before last winter because we knew that things were going to be changed. We knew that we were going to have to change our strategy on supply from a just-in-time inventory to one that is much more a planned process. Last year brought it to a complete and very evident head that we had to do something. And it happened. Last summer, we encouraged homeowners to work with their propane marketers. We encouraged them to talk about pre-buy. We encouraged them to talk about summer fill. We encouraged them to get on budget payment programs, and consumers overwhelmingly responded. Last summer, we sold in excess of 45 million extra gallons of propane above and beyond what we had in any of the 7 to 10 years in the summer before that time. This helped the supply crunch that we could have had during the fall and early winter this year. Obviously, the weather's a little bit different, but we look at this as a model that needs to keep moving forward. We need to have programs and policies in place, and that's part of our job as an industry. The part about pre-buying propane for LIHEAP and other things are things that this body can do to help that same process, get more gallons purchased and delivered during the summer months. One-third of all the propane used in Minnesota can be stored in consumer tanks. One-third of our consumption is there if we fill those tanks in the summertime. That gets us closer to a 3-to-1 winter-to-summer blend of getting propane in, and that's where we need to achieve. We need to achieve a better ratio on supply, and we're working towards that. So the industry will continue to do that. We will also continue to work with our programs that we have, encouraging people to put in more energy-efficient appliances. In the last 10 years, we've spent $2.5 million giving incentives and rebates to consumers to put in more efficient furnaces and water heaters into their homes, and we will continue that project over the next several years. Anything we can do to help that process by this body would be greatly appreciated. And so that, with that, with the provisions of this bill as we've seen them as amended, the Minnesota Propane Association is in support of those, and we will continue to work with Representative Baker and the chairman and move on from there. And I'm open to any questions.
Representative Hartman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, Mr. Leiter. Could you tell us a little bit about the state of the propane supplies in Minnesota today?
Mr. Leiter.
Chairman Garofalo, Representative Portman, propane supply in Minnesota, due to the proactivity of consumers, but also of our propane marketers, is in great shape. There's no amount of cold weather that could happen between now and spring that would cause any kind of calamity. Where is it? Knock on. The propane marketers did an excellent job. They pre-bought. They did the things that they need to do. And because of that, and because of the supplies that not just happened here, it was an upper Midwest situation. The supplies that were in Conway, Kansas. A year ago, we started with one of the lowest inventories on record in the supply caverns where we draw our supply from in Kansas. This year, they're at one of the all-time highs. And for this time of year, they're very high. So propane supply in Minnesota and the country is in great shape right now. We anticipate that we should have at least stable to moderating prices over the next several months, and it should be good for consumers. The price of propane, the supply of propane should be good for consumers in the outlook.
Representative Hartman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Leiter, so do you prefer that if we were to put a pre-buy or a summer fill provision in statute that we go with a pre-buy or a summer fill? One of the things I noticed in the bill is it forbids the tanks to be filled prior to October 1st, and I was just wondering if you have a preference between a pre-buy approach or a summer fill approach.
Mr. Leiter.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Portman, if we had a preference, we would prefer that to be a summer fill program, something where we could move that product before the end of September. That's part of the process of earning allocations on pipelines and railroad systems, is that we earn a certain amount of allocation for the winter months based on how much we move during the summer. And that would be important for our supply situation to do it that way. Lacking the ability to do that, the pre-buy is the second best thing.
Representative Hartman. And members, there's a good story involved with that provision of the bill, and that is that last session, Representative Portman and others looked at actually having the federal government purchase this stuff using those federal LIHEAP funds in summer when they tend to be the lowest prices, and we were told we could not do it. And when Representative Baker joined the legislature, he brought the idea to me, and I said, well, we've actually looked at this already. We can't do it. And he said, are you sure? And I said, well, that's what they told us. And he on his own went out and contacted some people and came back to me and said, I think you're wrong. Which is, you know, you're not supposed to say that to the chair. You're not supposed to say it's wrong. But apparently he didn't get the memo during freshman orientation. So it turned out Representative Baker was right, that actually there were states that were doing it, and there was some sort of miscommunication through the state of Minnesota. But one of the stipulations that we're being told now is that we actually cannot fill. The reason why that provision is in there right now is the feds are saying we cannot deliver it by that date. Now, we were wrong. We were communicated misinformation before. We could be communicated misinformation again. But certainly, I think, you know, this member's perspective, that if we have that flexibility to deliver it early, there's really no downside to doing that. Representative Hartman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think it's also important to recognize that we had a study in the LEC on propane conversion strategies, and Ms. Levinson-Falk investigated what was going on in Wisconsin and actually got some contact with the federal government, got some good information. And what I'm understanding from her report that we went over in the LEC the first couple weeks of session is that Wisconsin does this, but it's a looking forward thing. You take this year's allocation, you save a little bit at the end of the year, and you can use it then for your summer fill program. The reason why the bill as drafted, we have to fill after October 1st, is we are doing a looking back. So perhaps as this bill goes through the process, we could work on a looking forward approach like Wisconsin, so we could do summer fills rather than pre-buys.
And those are that's one option that's available to us. Also, is the option of actually having a state-based LIHEAP program as well. So, good points, Representative Fortman.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Fortman.
Follow up on that question. Yeah. Do you have your targets yet?
Not yet. No. Any other questions from members of the committee? Representative Vogel.
Yes, Chair. Thank you, Mr. Leiter. You said that about one third of the capacity could actually be stored on site. I'm curious if you have any idea of what the breakdown would be between residential and commercial, because I would assume most residential tanks are much smaller than the commercial ones.
Mr. Leiter.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Vogel, I do not have that type of breakdown at this time. That's something that we could probably work on for you.
Representative Vogel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Leiter. Yeah, it might be a way to look at addressing the issue we just talked about, because if indeed the commercial is a larger proportion, if that was done first, maybe then we could at least for the time being get around the October 1st date by making sure those facilities have the incentive they need to get those things done, so therefore we could then use the gas that's being bought for the residential need.
Representative Metza.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Vogel, I just want to point out we got 140 gallons at my house in capacity.
All right. Thanks, Representative Metza. Any other questions from members of the committee? Representative Newberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Baker, I want to thank you for bringing this bill forward. I also represent a district in Greater Minnesota where agriculture is one of the main pillars of who and what we are. We had a huge issue with drying of crop last fall, and we also have a lot of folks who depend on propane for heat. But we also have a significant number of propane using poultry producers who heat their barns, their chickens. They use a lot of propane. It was this perfect storm that hit, and I know that the temporary measure that we passed last year, well, it was a good temporary fix, and I know that this year is looking all right so far. This is Minnesota, remember. We do get snow in June at times. But I do want to say thank you for doing this. This brings some relief to me and to the people in my district, because this is an enormous issue, and I'm very grateful that you are being proactive and forward-thinking in addressing this. I want to say thank you for doing this.
Any additional questions for the testifiers? Representative Swazinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To Representative Baker, or I forget your name, from the Petroleum Association. Propane Association, sorry. Just kind of my question really centers around sections. Section 5, number 6, the portion of the bill talking about excluding propane storage facilities when it comes to the need portion. And just kind of when you're talking about the Cochin pipeline and you're talking, I know a lot of work has been done with CHS on expansion of just kind of the industrial side of you know, what does that mean to you guys moving forward? So we know what work's been done over the next year. You know, how important, you know, what kind of projects are in the pipeline, quote unquote, as far as just the kind of the standard practice of where you feel that, you know, your storage facilities are going, whether that be kind of on a residential place. Are you moving from 500 to 1,000 gallon tanks when you're purchasing new tanks for leasing to your customers, and then from a larger portion, just from, you know, the 6 to 10 to 12 to 20,000 gallon tanks? Kind of where do you see that kind of going over the next year, and how important is that part of the bill?
Mr. Leiter.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I think we're seeing it in all facets. we've had propane companies that have bought a significant number of 1,000-gallon tanks to replace 500-gallon tanks at homes so they could reduce the number of wintertime deliveries and deliver more in the summer. Virtually every propane company in the state of Minnesota has also increased the number of storage tanks that they have, adding another 30,000, 60,000, or 180,000 gallons of storage. That's part of the cause of the definition issues that we had in the Certificate of Need and the EAW. We know we have a rail facility that's going to be moved in northern Minnesota because it was shut down by the railroad, and that process is going to happen this spring and early summer. And so there's constant things going on. We think that we're probably in a 2 to 3 year build out yet from where we are to get where we need to be with propane supply. We're kind of in a blend area. We were blessed for many, many years of having two major pipelines deliver propane into the state of Minnesota. We still need to remember that 50 to 60% of our propane for the state of Minnesota comes from a pipeline that comes up from Kansas. So we do have pipeline supply. It's not like we don't have any. We do have that. But in contrast, we look at states such as Washington, Oregon, and California where there are no pipelines, and they receive everything by rail. So we're into a blended system that will be going forward. But it takes time to move from a just-in-time inventory to something that's a little more blended, and I think that process will take us to 2 to 3 years. The tax provision that, you know, sunsets in a couple of years makes sense. You know, it gives a couple of years for people to add storage, do the things they need to do to make their customers secure, or customers to make their families and businesses feel more energy secure. And I think it's a good way to go. So we think there's going to be a lot of projects in a large variety. I know out in this area, I had one of our marketers who said, I don't want to add more storage at my place. I want to add more storage at my consumers and putting it into the field. And I've talked to another one that wants just the opposite. I want it at my storage, not at the consumer. So everybody's got a different model, and that's all right. There's more than one way to skin a cat, and I think that's what we need to look at. So I think it's going to be.
Representative Lunan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This question would be for Representative Baker. First of all, I want to thank you for item 8, using the mechanics of reappropriating. In my district, going around and talking to people, there's always a lot of questions around. Every time we try to solve a problem, we immediately go out for additional money rather than looking at how we're spending revenue now and is there a better way to allocate it. However, when Representative Mahoney was asking earlier about the account, it does bring up the question that was it looked at as to why that $300,000 is sitting there available? Are we just choosing this instead of the thermal, or was that how long had that money been sitting there, or what created that balance?
Representative Baker, and then we're going to go to Representative Mahoney, and then we have two testifiers who have been incredibly patient during this, so we'll move on to that. So Representative Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Lunan. I think the purpose of that account is it was sitting there. Again, I don't know how long it has been there. Somebody may have to help me with the length of that fund. It still had dollars sitting in it, which would alert me to maybe the fact that it isn't a heavily used account. It was a number that we had used. I thought $300,000 was a good number to start with. This is a 2-year window. It's something we want to get going. When the funds are gone, they're gone. I don't plan on filling it up with any further funds at this time, but it's there. We're not closing the current solar thermal fund. It's just using that for this period of time to allow the conversion of either propane or natural gas and those rebates for customers that need that at this time. So, again, the historical part, we may have to defer to others that know that history better. But it was the amount that I used because I didn't feel I was going to close that account, but also put the money where it was needed most right now, and that's in propane and natural gas.
Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Baker. In legislative speak, it's really, really hard to close a program down. So what you start today is likely to go on forever. To the Petroleum Association, you've spoken a ton about the increased capacity and everybody increasing their tanks from 500 gallons to 1,000 gallons or 100,000 to 300,000. Do you know what the increase in storage capacity is in the state since last year, and what the increase in storage capacity will be at the end of the 2 years in this bill?
Mr. Leiter.
Mr. Chairman, or Representative Mahoney, I do not have those specific numbers. I could guess anecdotally. This is not the place to be guessing. We can find that information out. If the committee would like me to, I can survey our membership. We can ask those pointed questions about what they have done and their intentions, and we can probably come up with some pretty solid numbers for you, but I don't have that information at this time.
Mr. Leiter, could you share that with the committee administrator so that way we can share it with the entire committee when you get that information? That way, not to gatekeep, but again, just to make sure everyone on the committee gets access to the information. Representative Mahoney. Thank you. Seeing no other questions, Mr. Leiter, first of all, before you leave, Mr. Leiter, I just wanted to say thank you. I know last year was a very difficult time for your members. Unfortunately, you were on the front lines of this. There's a lot of unfair allegations being made against the propane industry in general for those who are distributing. And your members stood up, helped out a lot, actually drove down to Kansas and to Texas, waited in line to bring that propane back here. The railways being jammed with oil tankers had nothing to do with your members, but it contributed significantly to the price increases. And then this compromise legislation you guys have been great to work with. And I just want to say thank you to your members for everything that you did that process last year. Welcome to the committee. Please state your names for the record.
Thank you. My name is Steve Ucatel. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and the committee for allowing me to speak today about an issue that affected a lot of people here in Minnesota last year. I was asked to speak of some of the things that I saw firsthand. I'm a turkey farmer and a deer farmer. My company name is Ucatel Farms Incorporated. And I lease six barns from a local turkey company here. And I raise about 60,000 turkeys at a time. And my second business is Crow River Whitetails. That's at my home, and I have about 60 deer on 60 acres of property there. Neither one of these businesses use propane. The company that I lease from pays for the propane for all the turkeys. And deer are winter hardy, and they really could care less about the heat. And the colder it is, the more they like it. So that's weird. Personally, I do use propane at my home, and I'm very fortunate to have alternative forms of heat available. I have wood heat, and I have electric heat. So when gas hit $3.50 a gallon last year, I simply shut off my furnace, and I used my other heat sources. So it didn't really affect me a whole lot. But when I heard about this bill that could help prevent the high propane prices, I immediately thought of some of the people that I know that were affected by these high gas prices, people that are low income or on low fixed incomes, and these people are some of my friends and family, and elderly and disabled people. I also saw things last year that I never saw before with propane. I saw people selling assets to pay for their propane bill. I saw people getting loans to pay for one thing that my wife noted to me earlier. There was a bank in Painesville that was offering 4% loans for propane users, if you qualify, whatever that means. So I'm not sure. And also that people in extreme areas were limited to only 100 gallons of propane at a time per delivery. And I'm sure that some of these people are still paying on those loans today, the low-income people. So it would be nice to see some of these people get help, people that are truly in need. Anything, I'm sure, helps. As the bill suggests, allowing more facilities in rural Minnesota, giving homeowners an incentive to replace smaller tanks with larger tanks, and allowing low-income families the ability to lock into summer rates with a pre-purchase option makes sense. It'll help take out some of the dramatic price swings through the winter and maybe allow more consistent fuel prices like natural gas users enjoy. Natural gas is not available in my area, so propane is the next best thing with a stable price. I'd like to thank Dave Baker for carrying this bill, and I ask the committee to review and maybe pass the legislation for rural Minnesota. And again, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and the committee for allowing me to speak today.
Thank you very much. Did you wish to add anything?
Oh, he covered it pretty
well. Okay. All right. Thank you. Any questions for our testifiers? Representative Clark, did you have questions for the testifiers?
Not for the current one. It was for the last. I'll just wait.
Okay. Any questions for the testifiers? Representative Hartman.
Just a turkey farming question. I know when the turkeys are babies, you have to keep the barns pretty warm. What is the temperature that you have to keep the barns at when they're new hatchlings?
To the testifier.
Thanks. I raise turkeys from 6 weeks old till they're big. When they're little, they keep the temperatures at about 95 degrees, I believe, really, really warm. And then as they get older, from the six-week mark where I raise them, it's about 70 degrees in the barn. And then towards the time they're ready for shipment, it can be down 55 degrees right in there. It's comfortable for them. They prefer it a little bit cooler, actually, maybe even 45-degree range, but we keep the temperatures warmer.
Representative Hartman?
Mr. Chair, just a quick question. So did you say you lease your facilities where you raise your turkeys?
Yeah, I lease that. Yep.
And do they contract for propane heat, or what is the source of heat?
Absolutely, yep. Okay. Yep. My I'm sure different contractees have different programs and that, but mine, I don't have to pay for the propane, thank goodness.
Mr. Chair, last question. So did you have to pay additional charges last winter when the company you leased your facility from was paying more to heat your barn, or were you insulated from that?
I was insulated from that.
So. Thank you.
Okay. Seeing no other further questions, thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you.
Representative Baker, did you have any other members of your testimony?
Mr. Chairman, not on my list unless there's folks that have come up.
This is a public hearing. If there's any members of the public who wish to testify in favor or voice concerns of the bill, you may come forward to offer your testimony. All right, good. With that, we'll close the public comment portion of the testimony. Representative Clark, did you want to ask a question now, or do you want to move
sure,
to
I can ask.
Representative Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So, Representative Baker, I noticed that the environmental assessment worksheet is discontinued under your bill. What is the wisdom in not having the company look at the environmental impact? Why are we removing that from what they're doing to, you know, in the community?
Representative Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Clark. Very good question. The need, and typically what I have learned is because of the quick response that I feel is needed right now to get larger storage facilities in rural Minnesota, a lot of times the certificate of need and the environmental worksheet takes a long period of time. All of these propane tanks are above ground. After redefining and looking at the definitions of propane, it felt that these were safe and good ways to move forward in a very quick manner so it doesn't get bogged down with a long period of assessments to a safe storage above ground in a manner that I felt that the propane industry felt good about. Visiting with the experts, I think they felt strongly this is a good move without putting anything at risk, especially the environment.
Mr. Eliff, do you want to add on something?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Maybe a little inside baseball here. The definitions of propane would exempt propane storage facilities from a mandatory environmental assessment worksheet. There is still the possibility of that being done. The Pollution Control Agency is what's called the responsible governmental unit for doing environmental review of propane storage facilities. And if the agency decides, because of the location or the type of facility involved, that an environmental assessment worksheet can be done, it can still do that. There's also a provision in that law which allows for a petition for an environmental assessment worksheet to be done that needs the signature of 100 residents of Minnesota. So that's another
way that environmental review can be done. And thirdly, the Environmental Quality Board, which administers the environmental review program, can on its own decide that environmental assessment worksheet should be prepared.
Thank you. Representative Clark.
Mr. Chairman. Well, one of the things I understand about the environmental assessment worksheet is it's done by the company itself, and correct? And so the timeliness of it would be different than if you know, there's a much more extensive environmental evaluation. So I'm not really sure why this would be a problem. It's not the certificate of need I'm talking about. And it sounds like, actually, right now we have a little leeway in time. We're not in a big crisis, you know. And so it seems to me like it's just kind of a basic assurance to the community that there are no environmental problems associated with a new facility. And so it seems to me just kind of a wise thing to do. And so I don't know. I meant to ask the fellow from Mr. Leiter, I believe.
He's still here, I think.
Yeah. Why they would not want to do that? Just as a matter of good business.
Mr. Leiter, he's making his way to the table. And Mr. Leiter, I don't know if you heard the question. Representative Clark was wondering about the elimination of the mandatory requirement in the bill for the EAW.
So restate that again exactly what we're at.
Representative Clark.
Sure. I was just wondering why you would not want the environmental worksheet process to be part of what you're doing, since it's something that you're able to control and you're telling us how safe your facilities are. It's different than it being something that's coming from the, you know, state government.
Mr. Leiter.
Chairman, Representative Clark. Well, first and foremost, the propane industry has been opted out or relieved from all EPA requirements at the federal level because propane is not a pollutant. It's not an air pollutant, and it's not a groundwater pollutant. So as far as causing things that would be fall under an EAW, there just isn't anything there to deal with. And so that's we find that it's kind of a odd place for us to be in that. We were not involved in anything in the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency before this year until they found the obscure definition of a synthetic fuel that included propane. And so for the last 50 years, 60 years in the state of Minnesota, the propane industry has never had to do an EAW. Now, this does not mean that we would not do some of the other safety factors that go along with that. We are mandated to do a fire safety analysis through the process that we do through the code requirements in the fire code to ensure that everything is safe in that area. But as far as our environmentally, there's just is nothing there for us to mitigate. But if there's a call for a local area authority having jurisdiction in a local area says, gee, we want to have this review done anyway, that could be called for.
Thank you, Mr. Leiter. Representative Hortman to the A4 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, we can do that now. I have a lot of questions about the bill as well, but we can go right to the A4.
Representative Hortman, just for process, so this is the final amendment in our packets. We'll work on this, and then we'll go to questions. And we've closed the public comment portion of the bill, but we're not, legislators will still talk. Representative Hortman.
Sounds good. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, I would move the A4 amendment. What the A4 amendment does is it deletes the section of the bill where Representative Baker is providing a sales tax exemption for tanks that are 100 gallons or higher. And instead of providing that sales tax exemption, it takes the money that would be spent on that, and that's additional spending that's in this bill above and beyond the state budget as it exists today, takes that additional spending that Representative Baker is authorizing in his bill, and it converts it into direct assistance to residential consumers through the Energy Assistance Program. The rationale for the amendment, members, is that people who can afford to buy 100-gallon tanks aren't the people who need our help. Most people who need help and who get help through the community action agencies rent their tanks. They can't afford to purchase them. And in order for us to target the need to the people who need it the most, I think we should redirect the new money that's in Representative Baker's bill to the people who need it the most.
And Representative Hortman, what is the appropriation amount for 1.4?
Mr. Chair, I was going to ask you if you have a revenue note on the bill. I understand the bill goes from here to the tax committee because it spends through the tax budget. And I'm wondering if you have the amount of spending determined yet.
It just so happens we have a preliminary fiscal note, and I apologize to members of the public. You're getting into the, I guess it'll be the sausage-making process of a bill. What we have here, I'll explain it, is that we have a process where we have a fiscal note where nonpartisan experts look in and tell us what is the cost of the bill in terms of if there's additional spending, if there are revenue reductions, what is the, from the government's perspective, what is the cost to reducing the tax. In this case, Representative Baker's bill would allow for a sales tax exemption on a temporary basis. Now, we have a preliminary fiscal note, and maybe Ms. Hendricks can talk about that aspect, but my understanding is we do not have the revenue note yet from the Department of Revenue. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair and members, that is correct. A revenue estimate has been asked, but it's not been processed yet. It should be ready when it gets to the tax committee. There was a similar bill last year that just had the tax exempt language in there, and the estimates at that point for revenue were about $400,000, between $400,000 and $450,000 per fiscal year. But again, that could be updated or changed with the new revenue estimate.
Representative Hortman, is it your wish to leave the dots in there, or did you want to put a specific dollar amount?
Well, Mr. Chair, we can do it one of two ways. We can leave the dots and have the amount added in the tax committee should the amendment be successful. Or we could change the dots to 400,000. I think, Mr. Chair, if you would allow me to incorporate, I would put 400,000 as a placeholder.
Yep. So, members, I know we have a 24-hour rule in this committee, but I'm going to waive it for this one because Representative Hortman's so nice and she's my friend. We'll put the $400,000 as appropriated from the general fund onto the government. So those dots will have a $400,000 appropriation. However, I would like to. So that Representative Hortman incorporates that into the proposal. I would say that this would narrow the focus of the bill. I do think that certainly focusing on low-income individuals is an important part of the program, but also we're trying to incentivize commercial and industrial-level storage, which is where we can get the biggest bang for the buck. And as we heard from the testimony today, the more storage we have, the more all of us benefit, not just low-income or middle-class families, but all individuals. So that would be, and plus, I don't have a target for the committee, so I'm reluctant to spend money. We do not know what other programs would have to be cut or what taxes would have to be raised to pay for this. Representative Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Portman. I think it's a good question, especially regarding the residential tanks. You're probably right, and if we want, there may be a petroleum company that may want to speak to this, but I think the residential folks mostly rent those tanks. I think to have folks buy their own tanks is probably more rare than not. So I think saving that is not going to be a big impact, but again, there may be some folks who could speak better on that than I could. My intention was thinking of the larger suppliers, the dealers in this area, to be able to forego those sales tax on a larger storage facility, say 50 to 100,000 gallon storage facility, really is just also a savings back to the customer. The less the dealer pays, the less our customers and our residential folks will pay when it comes to the sales tax collections. Everything goes back to the end user. So with that, I guess I'm looking for some direction as far as how we want to move on this, if we should dissect this a little bit more, maybe looking for some direction from the chair or the committee, looking for open up ideas.
Representative Baker, I stated my opinion that I think that absent a target and the fact that it was sort of exempt commercial and industrial, vast majority of that storage would narrow the program and not serve the purposes. Any other questions on the A? Any comments or questions on the A4 amendment? And Representative Hortman, you get to close out the argument. Representative Hortman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It really is a policy question, and the policy question is whether we're going to put in a sales tax exemption that benefits higher income homeowners and businesses, or whether we would spend the $400,000 instead on people who truly have a need for energy assistance. And in my view, the policy question is clear that you would want to help the families who truly have the need. The other problem is if you incentivize storage, which may not be needed, you do end up possibly raising the price to consumers, because if we have overbuilt storage,
in the state of Minnesota, the consumers pay for that capital expense that the distributors invest on their monthly bills. And so I think in order to target the relief at what people really think, you know, where people really think the help is needed, that my amendment does it better than your bill. And, Mr. Chair, I would request a roll call.
Roll call has been requested on the A4 amendment. The committee legislative assistance ready to go. We'll go through the roll. Start with me.
Garofalo?
No.
Baker?
No.
Mahoney?
Aye.
Clark?
Yes.
Fabian is not here. Gunther not here. Portman?
Aye.
Isaacson not here. Johnson not here. Lunin? Metza?
Aye.
Neuberger?
No.
O'Neill?
No.
Scott?
No.
Simonson is not here. Smith?
No.
Swazinski?
No.
Vogel?
No.
Virginius is not here.
There being four ayes and nine nays, the amendment is not adopted. Discussion to the House File 550 as amended. Representative Horman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Baker, I was wondering if you had some time to visit with representatives from the Department of Commerce as you put the bill together.
Representative Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Portman. I have not had detailed conversations. I know we have a representative here today from Commerce. We've had no one-on-one contacts from this. I know I visited with her earlier today about this, and they've got history in dealing with this kind of language. Back in 2006, they had some things with the LIHEAP program with the federal government. Specifically and detailed out, no, as far as how it's going to be executed and laid out, not specific information with Commerce.
Department of Commerce staff, can you raise your hands if you're here? Did you want to offer any thoughts on the bill or offer any testimony from the department? Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you. My name is Allison Grebner. I work at the Department of Commerce and Government Affairs, and I did introduce myself to Representative Baker this morning, letting him know we would be here to answer questions. There are some sort of logistical timing details laid out in the bill that may need to be addressed based on the verbal guidance we've received from the Federal Department of Health and Human Services. I will say that we've asked for written guidance from them in preparation for the bill moving forward so we can exactly answer these types of questions so we don't have miscommunication. Excuse me, like you mentioned, Mr. Chair, from last year about when we can spend the money and when we can't. So I wanted to let the committee know that that communication is going forward. I don't have an answer yet for you, however.
To the testifier, do you know, so this was an extensive conversation we had last session where everyone
right.
seemed like this was a good idea,
right.
and the Department of Commerce was adamant, saying, nope, we can't do it, there's probe. Do we know where the communication breakdown was there?
Well, that's a great question. We did receive verbal guidance from DHS, the Federal Department of Health and Human Services, saying that we weren't allowed to reimburse the general fund if the funding was spent prior to October 1st. And so that was the crutch of the problem. That's still our understanding today, although after talking with Ms. Levinson-Falk, she seems to have different information, which is part of the reason why we're seeking clarification from the federal government so we can clarify this once and for all. So.
And Representative Baker, I don't want to out your source, but I think you had worked with the Department of Energy, correct?
Correct.
Yeah, okay. So I appreciate you. I know we closed the public comment portion.
Right.
I just wanted to make sure.
No,
going forward,
that.
I assume the Department of Commerce is willing to work with Representative Baker on any concerns or...
Of course. No, definitely. And I apologize we didn't get a chance to speak prior to today's hearing, but we're definitely willing to work on this moving forward.
Thank you.
Thank
Representative
you.
Portman, then Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Baker, were you aware that there's a new solar thermal company that just announced they're moving to Minnesota because of the solar thermal set-aside?
Representative Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hortman, I was not aware of that.
The company
Representative
is called,
Hortman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's called Conserval Engineering Incorporated, and they've met the qualifications to have their solar thermal meet the Made in Minnesota program, and they are moving to Minnesota. And they cited as a reason for their move to Minnesota the solar thermal program that you're taking all the money from. Representative Baker, did you ask the Department of Commerce in your PACE provision what they thought about your PACE provision?
Representative Baker, have you asked the Commerce Department since they came up here and testified earlier?
Mr. Chairman, I guess I've not had a chance to really dive into deep with the Commerce of any relevance of our bill because, again, I think that the expectation would be Commerce is really smart people. They're going to figure out how to execute these kind of things. If there was a problem, they would have visited with me earlier, and I look forward to visiting with the Commerce and figuring these things out. So not at this time.
Representative Fortin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's usually, I know you're new to the legislature, but as a freshman, usually when you're regulating an agency, they're the first people who give you good, helpful advice. With regard to the PACE program, do you have an understanding of whether or not the conversions that you're authorizing under the PACE program would be bankable and would be financeable under the program as it currently exists?
So your question is that, was it, if we don't change the law, would they still work right now?
Well, Mr. Chair, if we change the law as he's proposing in his bill, I don't think that any of the projects that he's proposing to use the PACE program could use the PACE program because I don't think they're bankable. And I was just wondering if he had any conversations with anybody regarding the way that the financing mechanism in PACE works.
Okay. I guess you can try taking a crack at it. I don't understand the question, but you can.
Mr. Chair, I think that would be something I would want to refer to Mr. Eloff on that question to help understand the detail of that question.
Because, Representative Hortman, isn't the change in the bill what would determine what is eligible for this program?
Mr. Chair, when the PACE program was drafted, it was drafted with the advice and consent of the financial community. What the PACE program, the portion of your bill that changes the property assessed clean energy program, took several years to develop. And what it is instead of going to a bank and getting a loan for an energy improvement on your property, you would instead go to your municipality and repay your investment through your property taxes. In order to use that mechanism, your municipality has to be able to bond for that type of expense. So it has to have a demonstrated payback. We changed it last year from a demonstrated payback of 10 years to a demonstrated payback of 20 years. And the projects that were described in the statutory language would meet the 20-year payback under existing law. Now, what Representative Baker is proposing, that people who convert from propane to natural gas would fall into the same bucket as people who switch to more energy conservative appliances or to renewable energy. When you save energy, we know the cost of zero energy is $0. So you have a savings over time when you invest. We know the cost of sunlight is $0. And so when you switch to solar technology, you have a savings over time and you can get financial institutions to assure, say, the city of Wilmer, that they will in fact be paid back because that property owner will have lower costs over time. If you switch from propane to natural gas, you have no certainty in the future as to what your price would be because the price of natural gas is merely a pass-through on your utility bill. And so I find it hard to believe that a bank would provide a loan or that the city of Wilmer would be able to get a bond with no indication of whether the homeowner or the business owner will be able to pay back the funds.
So in the example of replacing an existing propane with a more efficient propane appliance, that would be bankable using this definition?
Yes, Mr. Chair, my understanding is what the bill financed was conversions.
So I think there was one of the amendments we adopted actually modified that section a little bit. Mr. Eloff, did you want to add anything?
Mr. Chair, I think Representative Hortman is certainly correct in that the lending community would be interested in the uses of the fund and would be interested in the ability of the people taking out the loans to repay the funds. I believe the assumption here is that natural gas costs less than propane and savings will accrue as a result. And those savings will be partly the funds used by the homeowner to repay the loan.
So maybe going forward, one of the things we should do is look at historical pricing and see, has there been a point at which propane has been cheaper than natural gas?
Mr. Chair, Representative Baker, I think that would be a good idea.
Okay. Any other comments or questions from members of the committee? Representative Mahoney, then Lunin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Representative Baker, just to be clear, there'll be no money left in the solar thermal program going forward.
Representative Baker or Mr. Eloff? Mr. Eloff reaching for the mic.
Mr. Chair and Representative Mahoney, my understanding is the fiscal staff asked the department how much was in the fund within the last few weeks, and I believe the figure was $122,000. That was before they got an additional $250,000 in January for the coming fiscal year. So help me here, I'm doing the math. I think that leaves them, and we're taking $300,000, I think that leaves them with $72,000 this year.
Representative Baker, do you want to add anything?
Mr. Chairman, no, I was just going to repeat. That's the question that I had asked Mr. Eloff as well, because the intent of this is not to shut that fund down. It's to take that transfer now and use it in a more of a propane-friendly manner at this point.
Ms. Hendricks, did you want to add anything?
Mr. Chair, members, that information that Mr. Eloff gave is correct. About 120,000 rolled over from last year. So in addition to the 372,000 available. So with the $300,000 transfer, there's about $72,000 available. In,
Representative 15. Mahoney.
Mr. Chair, Representative Baker. So if we're taking and we're doing $122,000, $120,000, maybe it's $130,000, give or take, a year in incentives, and we're finally starting to bring in solar thermal companies, so that might grow, leaving about $72,000 for the incentives. What if someone does the solar thermal and there's no money left for the incentive? They're just kind of out of luck?
Representative Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Mahoney. The intention of this bill was to, again, put the emphasis on conversions and some propane relief in rural Minnesota. In today's situation, I felt the need or the priority should be here. I think solar thermal is very important. Yep. I want to see that grow, and I'm very excited to hear that a new company is coming to Minnesota for that. So for me and my intentions of this bill is to put the emphasis on rural Minnesota, conversion on a more level playing field and a more competitive pricing on a stable price for heating sources. So today, I want to see that be the priority.
Representative Mahoney?
Mr. Chair and Representative Baker, with just very few solar thermal companies in the state and more coming now, this particular $250,000 was a good incentive to get them to come to open up shop and to do the advertising, do the expansion. Essentially, you're saying it's done. They're going to take the money out this year. Companies need consistency. You're taking the consistency away. This company, I haven't had any contact with them. I had heard about them coming because of the economic development piece. I don't know that they are not here just yet. They are very likely to reconsider coming here with this lack of commitment to the solar thermal. It is something I championed all along, so I will not be voting for your bill for that particular reason. And I think what you're doing is costing the state jobs. You're running in this bill without understanding what the capacity is, and having seen over my tenure at the Capitol how often companies ratchet up capacity or ratchet up whatever and then charge the consumers and have excess capacity. We've seen it in energy and fuel production time and time again. and it's taken, they've always come to the state to bail them out at the end, and I think your bill is setting them up. Maybe not this year, and maybe it's got all the great intentions of the world, but the unintended consequences 2 years or 3 years or 4 years down the line, I think industry is going to fill the capacity it probably needs without harming other industries and without a tremendous amount of work on our part. Business does what it's supposed to do. Capitalism does actually work. I know some people have called me a socialist, and I've sometimes worn that very proudly, some other times not. But I think capitalism does work, and I think your incentive here has problems down the road. So I'll be voting against your bill.
Thank you, Representative Mahoney. Representative Lunan.
Mr. Chairman, the bulk of my question was already answered, and I'll get clarification on the minor parts later. Thanks.
Representative Swazinski. Representative Neuberger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just would like to approach Representatives Mahoney's comments about consistency. How could one, my question is to the body at large here, is how can one new solar company just move in here and handle the heating the crisis that we're having statewide? This bill moves forward. It uses a relatively small amount of money to fix a problem that is in the here and now, and I appreciate what you're doing. God bless the solar people, but right now we need propane to protect our farms and our families.
All right. Seeing no other. Oh, we got Representative Hortman again. Representative Hortman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I sense that we're approaching a vote. Since we're about to get back on the bus, I would like to encourage members to vote no on the bill at this point. I think there's a lot of promise in the bill, and I hope that I'll have an opportunity to work with Representative Baker going forward. And it's too bad we didn't have a chance to work together before the bill was introduced. I think that the bill encourages storage, which may or may not be needed, and consumers may end up paying. It eliminates the certificate of need process, which may again lead to overbuilding. And the signal that's sent to new companies in the solar thermal area is keep your money outside of the borders of the state of Minnesota. Don't come because you can't count on this program. And I think that we need to work over time on converting the pre-buy provisions that you have in there into a summer fill program. And I think on balance, the way the bill is currently drafted is it's tilted towards higher income homeowners and businesses and not targeted at those who are struggling the most in this economy. And that's why I'll be voting no today.
Representative Baker, any closing comments before we vote?
Just, Mr. Chair, thank you again, committee, for taking a lot of testimony today. A lot of very good comments are coming through. I think what was important to me was really making sure that, again, I want to take a little bit of a dispute with Representative Portman, only from a standpoint, this was really intended for low-income families. That was the intent of this bill. We could probably tweak it, and it is not a perfect fix. But I think overall this is a really good policy to move forward. I'm extremely proud to introduce this again today here in Candy White County especially. And again, I once again move House File 550 with the amendments that have been pre-approved for final vote. And I urge a yes vote on this today.
Representative Baker renews his motion to have House File 550 be recommended as amended, be recommended to pass and refer to the Committee on Taxes. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, say nay.
No.
The motion prevails. The motion is adopted. Thank you, Representative Baker. Again, thank you to the City of Willmar for hosting us. Representative Baker, thanks for the idea of bringing us out here. It's especially with the Capitol under renovation right now, it's always better to bring the Capitol to the people than the people to the Capitol.